My name is Jerry, and this is the Wild Eye Podcast. Africa's best national parks. Hi, everybody. I have just returned from Willowveld. So that will be the Greater Kruger region. And for those of you that know the area, it's Sabi Sabi and then a lodge called Manwana. I therefore visited the Sabi Sands and the Thornybush Game Reserves. Absolutely phenomenal. There's something special about the Willowveld. You get there, it's the sound of the woodlands kingfisher. It's the early mornings with a bit of a cold touch in the air, and then it warms up to ridiculous heats. It's the lions, the cats, the leopards. It is just an amazing destination. But it's not the only one. And in this episode, Johan and Don have a bit of a chat around some of Africa's best and most iconic national parks. So if you have any thoughts on a safari, where to go, things you might not have heard of in the past, I hope you guys enjoy this one. And if you have any questions, give Johan and Don a shout. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody. So podcast time again. I'm here with Don. Don, how's it going?
Good morning, everybody. Good, thanks. And how are you, Johan?
I'm good, thanks. So in this particular podcast, we're going to be chatting about different national parks that you can find in Africa. Not necessarily sort of listing the best ones, but just some of the national parks and the benefits of visiting these national parks. And maybe we can also then sort of touch on kind of the difference between the national parks and private concessions. So I think just to make things a little bit easier, I think we'll start off in the southern part of Africa and then kind of work our way up. And I think one that a lot of South Africans, especially as guides, kind of grew up going to is the Kruger National Park. Don, I know you were just there recently. Talk to us a little bit about Kruger National Park. What do you enjoy about it? What people can expect?
Yeah, I think the first thing about Kruger National Park that's incredible is the value for money. It's really affordable to go there, even as South Africans. And sure, there is some international park fees that are slightly more expensive for international travelers visiting the park. But they've got this incredible system that even international people can book called wild cards. And then they can actually purchase that wild card once off. And then even if they stay for 3-4 weeks in the national park, they pay only the same amount of park fees, which is really a good saving. But I mean, the national park for me personally, it's as you said, it's memories. Going there is memories. I grew up going there every single September. And my parents still go there every year. And for me, it's a nice breakaway park. So if I sometimes don't even take my camera to the park. I just go out and enjoy the wildlife, just to be in the bush. It's obviously the game viewing isn't what's the most important thing for me going out there. It's just being with my family, taking them out on a drive, seeing what we see. Because obviously it's very different to going to the private concessions where you actively track and try and find animals. In the national park, because there's no off-roading or anything like that, you don't track animals per se. You just drive and hope you get lucky.
Yeah.
Often followed by, you see a pile of cars and you know, okay, maybe there's a sighting.
There's something there.
So I think Kruger National Park for me is just a place of memories.
Yeah. And I think, you know, with all the national parks, you've got the option of driving yourself, which is a big appeal for a lot of people. You know, you kind of create your own safari at your own pace. You can go where you want to go. But also in these national parks, there are also private operators that do operate there. So even in Kruger National Park, if you stay at the different rest camps, you can book a game drive. Or even if you stay outside of the park, you know, there are companies that you can book a kind of a safari with. It's usually like a sort of 3-hour kind of safari experience where you'll be in an open safari vehicle and then have a local guide. So I think Kruger National Park, I think it's a place where a lot of, kids in South Africa have lots of fond memories. And like a lot of the guides that you speak to, a lot of them, you know, it all started at the Kruger National Park for them.
And I think another thing that's worth mentioning about Kruger National Park is how easy it is to get there. So if, for example, want to combine the national park with Cape Town and you don't want to do a road trip, you can literally fly from Cape Town directly into Skukuza, which is the airport inside of Kruger National Park. You can rent a car there and then drive yourself around. So that's how easy it is. You don't even have to do the whole lengthy road trip through the country. So it's a very well-connected park.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, there's a lot of other national parks, obviously in South Africa, but I mean, I think we'll have a podcast for hours if we mention every single national park. If we go a little bit further north, then if we go into Zimbabwe, Mana Pools, So Monopoles, I think, is probably one of the most sort of well-known places or national parks in Africa. And I think the beauty about this place is that you can go on foot.
Yeah.
You know, even without, I think the rules are still that you can go without a qualified sort of local guide. I know they had regulations where they wanted to have people only walk with a guide. But I think now you can still walk by yourself, if I'm not mistaken.
You obviously have to do that with a lot of caution, though, because it is still a big five park, so it could still be anything.
Yeah, and it's, I think, you know, Monopoles, obviously a lot of people have seen photos of, you know, there's elephants going on their hind legs and people getting pretty close encounters with elephants on foot. But I think it's something that people need to sort of keep in mind is that it's very few individuals that you can actually do this with. So I know there have been incidents in the past where, you know, there have been sort of human-animal conflict, often with people, you know, just sort of getting out of the vehicle and just approaching any animal. So I think if you haven't got sort of walking experience in a area with potentially dangerous game, then rather, you know, go with either a private guide or a local guide on the ground there that can get you these incredible encounters, but to do it in a safe way. So Monopoles, that's one that's really popular. We then go sort of the neighbor Zambia. You've got South Luangwa. Have you been to South Luangwa yet?
No. I've been to Zambia, but I haven't been to either South Luangwa or Lower Zambezi. I'm going this year, so very excited for it, but haven't been. So you must, what's amazing about it?
Yeah, so South Luangwa and Lower Zambezi are probably two of my favorite national parks. And I just love Zambia because, you know, first of all, if we start off with South Luangwa, it's known as the Valley of Leopards, you know, and it's, if you're a person that loves big cats and loves the action, then the dry season in South Luangwa is incredible. So anytime from sort of July to October, a really good predator viewing. And it's also, it's not that busy. Now, yes, you can drive with your own vehicle sort of around the center of the park, Mfui, that side. You can get great game viewing, you can go camp there. But that area, because it's so easily accessible, it can be a little bit busy as well. Mm. Whereas if you go to the lodges that we use on our scheduled tours and private tours, you know, it's often away from the crowds. Mm. So you're not in a private concession, but you're so far from kind of where the main gates are that it's too far for people to get there. Unless they maybe do a full day drive, they might get this sort of early afternoon or kind of midday. But sort of that early morning and late afternoon prime game viewing time, you're in the best location. I think for Lower Zambezi, it's a bit of a combination of everything from amazing game viewing, again, very good for leopards, but also the scenery is phenomenal. I think having that Zambezi River there, the Winterthorn Forest, you know, it really is a really pretty national park. Lower Zambezi as well, you can do game drives by yourself in your own vehicle, although you don't see it as often as you would in a place like Kruger because there are not many campsites in the national park. It's more sort of lodges that you can stay at. But kind of just outside the park, they have what they call the GMA. So it's like a game management area. And there are some sort of campsites that people can go and stay and then do game drives into the park if they need to.
But Johan, just a question on that. So in Lower Zambezi, is off-roading allowed?
Mm.
So how does that work with your own car? Because I know, like, can anybody off-road, even if I go with my own car, can I then also go off the road? Or is it mostly for the lodge-based operators that can go off-road?
Yeah, so you can go off-road, which is quite unusual for a national park. Mm. But, you know, it's kind of knowing where to go off-road. And I think the problem with, you know, driving yourself in areas like South Luangwa and Lower Zambezi is it's such big areas. Mm. That to try and find anything by yourself is very difficult. You know, it's not like at Kruger when you go to the different rest camps, they've got like a map and they have pins that like a red is for lion or whatever it might be. So you can kind of get an idea of where the animals have been. Whereas, you know, in South Luangwa or Lower Zambezi, you're driving blind.
We'll be guessing.
Yeah. So again, you know, then it does make sense to stay at the lodges unless, like you said, you know, unless you're not too worried about kind of what you see. It's just a sort of time to be out in the bush, if you want to do a bit of birding, that kind of stuff, then, you know, going by yourself is fine. But I think if you're really looking to get as many sort of high-profile sightings and photographic opportunities as possible, then it does make sense to rather go with a local guide. The guys on radio comms with each other. So it does make it a lot easier than if...
And especially most of those lodge operators also offer, you know, the canoeing safaris on the Zambezi, which is obviously part of the experience.
Exactly.
So I think if you want the true low Zambezi experience, then maybe go to a lodge and do it that way. Yeah.
And I mean, like both the South Owango and low Zambezi, they've got all the different levels of accommodation that you'd want. There's the kind of cheaper lower end, there's mid-range, and there's also high-end. So there really are options around for everyone. If we go another popular country, Botswana. Now, I know you love Botswana quite a bit.
Probably my favorite.
Let's talk about the Chobe first, Chobe National Park. What have your experiences been in the Chobe?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, love the Chobe, especially because I love elephants. And Chobe is known as the highest concentration of elephants in Africa, especially in the dry season.
Yeah.
So what's incredible is, again, like you said, you can drive yourself around in Chobe and... To be very honest with you, I've only ever driven probably 4 or 5 roads in the Chobe because it's only roads that are needed to be driven.
Yeah.
And those are the roads that are close to the Chobe River.
Yes.
Because that's where absolutely everything is. That's where you find hundreds, sometimes even thousands of elephants spread out along the river. It's unbelievable to see. And then the lions and everything come down to the river. So that river road that you drive with your own car, it's such a thrill. It's incredible. The thing about Chobe, though, is it can get quite crowded, which is not so nice. So I often, especially if I know in an itinerary that I'm combining Chobe with the Kavango Delta, I would almost not look for predators at Chobe, if that makes sense. Because that's all those high profile like lion or leopard sightings in Chobe attracts so many vehicles. So I just decide normally if I'm there with someone or guests, I would literally say, and I know that we're doing the Delta, let's focus on elephants and let's focus on unusual antelope species like sable or roan, which you find in Chobe in quite significant numbers. And I would look for those things and then focus on the predators in the Delta. But absolutely love Chobe. It's such a unique landscape, sandy, it's beautiful.
And the nice thing with the Chobe as well is I think the river being there, as you mentioned, like you can do some river cruises, which can be amazing, especially during the dry season. You can get elephants swimming across the Chobe River, which is kind of what it's famous for. But there's also there's some nice little campsites that you can stay in the Chobe, but there's nothing. You know, there's no, you have to take everything with you. So water... and extra fuel, all of your food, all of these things you have to take with. So it's not like, again, I think the Kruger has become quite a more like a glamping in a way that, you know, you can go and stay in a tent, but at night you can go to the restaurants, have dinner. If you forget something, you know, there's a shop that you can buy stuff. Whereas, you know, if you go to Chobe, Monopool, all these other parks that we mentioned, you know, you literally have to be completely self-sufficient.
You have to.
And then we go further down Okavango Delta. That's another place that's that you love quite a bit.
And I think what people need to understand is the Delta is divided up into different sort of sections or areas. You get Muremi, which is known for self-driving. You can drive yourself around in Muremi, but as far as I know, the Vanguard Delta, where the concessions are, you can't really drive yourself there because those are sort of privately leased properties. So Muremi is what you'll be focusing on if you are driving yourself around. And again, this is probably one of the reserves that we haven't even mentioned this at all of the reserves. If you compare Kruger National Park to Muremi, Kruger National Park, you can even be okay in a low vehicle, like a vehicle that's low down to the ground.
Because all tar roads.
But the main roads are all tar, and then even the dirt roads are pretty well maintained in a way. Muremi, not the case. There you'd need a 4x4 SUV as high as you can go. Because it gets very, it's still the Delta, so it's a floodplain, it gets wet, it's muddy, there's sand. So you'll definitely need a high clearance vehicle. But I mean, you would want to go to Muremi because the game viewing is just out of this world. And it's one of the few national parks in my mind that just, you know, it's so wild. It's like you said, you will need to be completely self-sufficient, but it's like you set up campsites in the middle of where you'd feel like is the middle of nowhere, but there's just lions or wild dogs or elephants all around you. It's unreal.
Yeah.
I love that place.
Yeah. And it's also, I think, something that people need to understand as well is people often say, oh, I'm going to go in the dry season in like July to be fine. But that's when the floods come in.
Yeah.
So that Maremme area has kind of got water almost all year round. But I think Botswana is a great place in the Delta, especially to do a kind of like a camping, like a road trip. You know, you can do Maremme, you can go to Kwai, which is also great. And if you go further north, you go up to Savuti. And then you can even do the Chobe. So you really can do, I think it's probably for me, one of the best places if you're going to do like a self-drive sort of camping type trip. Now, the Botswana is brilliant for that. But again, you need to make sure that you are fully kitted out with a proper vehicle, completely self-sufficient, extra fuel, water, food, you know, fridges to keep things cool. And I would say ideally like a rooftop tent because, you know, there are no fences, lions, hyenas, leopards, you know, elephants.
Maybe even it's worth having like a satellite phone because if you get stuck somewhere and you can't get yourself out, like it might be worth having a satellite phone. The signal isn't all that great in the Delta as well, especially even in Maremme. So if you're stuck, you might be stuck in such a remote place where nobody else drives.
Yeah.
So then you'll be by yourself. So maybe have a satellite phone.
Yeah. And like you said, you need to know what you're doing. Have a recovery kit, first aid kit, all these things. Because there are no shops close by. No. You really are. We actually used to do a best of Botswana mobile camping trip, you know, that did exactly that route. We did Maremme, Kwai, and then Savuti. And it's a great itinerary. It really is. And I mean, the campsites are beautiful, but, you know, it's very basic. You've got ablution blocks, you've got showers and toilets and those things, but, you know, there's no kind of braai stands or places to cook. You really have to, you know, make a fire on the ground and kind of, yeah, like we said, be self-sufficient. If we go further west in Namibia, Etosha, I think Etosha is also, I think Namibia as a whole, a great country to drive yourself around, you know, from a landscape point of view. But I think from wildlife, I think Etosha is probably the place you want to be.
Yeah, I think it's the best national park again. But you would want to go ideally in the dry season because what Etosha is famous for is their watering holes and where all the different species of animals come together. They congregate around these water holes. And I think that's the magic of Etosha and especially the famous white elephants.
Yes.
Which are not actually white. It's just because of the very fine dust.
Yes.
And that's in that area. And then they have dust baths and that's sort of, they look quite whitish.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's one of the national parks I actually haven't been to personally. I've just seen photos and things, but it's definitely high up on my list to kind of, I love the idea of just taking a vehicle and cruising through Namibia. It's very easy to do. The roads and stuff's good. The country is safe. So another great destination for if you're looking to do self-drive.
I think the thing about Namibia is it's such a big and vast country that people tend to need to fly because they don't have that amount of, like, you know, you need, if you want to properly explore Namibia, you would actually need a closer to 2 weeks if you've got the time. And then I would suggest to drive because the beauty of the country is seen by road. You really see and get the essence of how vast it is if you actually drive through it. I've done it twice with my family, so never on a trip.
Yeah.
But with my family, we've literally driven through the whole country and back. And that's the way you see it. I mean, obviously, if you get closer to the areas of Sossus Vlei, doing a helicopter flip to actually get photographs of those dunes or whatever this place is magical. But like you said, to go to a place like Etosha, you definitely need to drive yourself there to really get an essence of how amazing the country is.
Yeah. Then I know the next national park you're very excited to get to, and that's Gorongosa.
Oh, yeah.
You're doing a safari there this year?
Yeah, I'm doing two this year.
Two this year.
Yeah.
So I haven't been, you haven't been.
Yeah.
But it looks phenomenal. You know, it's some of the photos and things I've seen there, there's great conservation efforts in there.
Yeah.
So I look forward to hearing your feedback from that. I think it's definitely one of the places that's, you know, you get these destinations that become like the hot topic, and I think Gorongosa is definitely one of those places at the moment. It's kind of what Zambezi, like that buzz around the Low Zambezi like a few years ago. I feel like Gorongosa is that place. So yeah, I'm very excited to see what you come back with.
I think what I'm most excited about for Gorongosa is the actual, the history behind it. I mean, the reason why it wasn't on the map really for the last few years because there wasn't many animals because of a civil war that took place there in the early 90s. And now some conservationists, especially conservationists from the States, started rehabilitating this area. Mm. So now wildlife there absolutely thrives.
Yeah.
It's and I think that's, and what the beauty of it is, not just the wildlife, but the landscape it's in. There's palm forests, fever tree forests, and then also flat plains. So you've got this beautiful mix of habitats. Which
is the right here.
As a big birder, I think I'm going to be so happy
there.
You know, I think the variety of bird species in Gorongosa is going to be next level.
Yeah.
But especially things like wild dogs and lion populations are absolutely thriving there. And again, another very unique animal that a lot of people, especially the seasoned safari goers, want to see are pangolins. Mm. And Gorongosa has been one of the most successful rehabilitation pangolin programs. Mm. And if you stay for more than, I think it's 5 nights at any of their camps in Gorongosa, you actually get to experience a pangolin day.
That'll be cool.
So I'm excited for that. Yeah. So I'll give you guys feedback once.
That'll be cool. I've got no idea. It's not those tree climbing pangolins.
No. It's the thinly ground pangolins. It's
ground pangolins. Okay, then, so that's sort of Southern Africa. Obviously, East Africa is so well known in the safari industry. You know, I think if you speak to anyone about, you know, wanting to go on their first safari and they sort of haven't done research, I think these two parks, the Masai Mara and the Serengeti, always comes into the conversation. Let's talk about the Masai Mara because you've been there quite a bit last year. Talk to us about the Masai Mara and what you enjoy about the park.
Yeah, again, I think the first thing to realize is that it's a very photographic friendly place.
Yeah.
You can never use the word easy place to photograph, but it's just, it feels like all the animals walk on the horizons there.
Yeah.
There's always a beautiful tree with a sunset. It's just such a paradise for photographers. But for people that aren't keen photographers, what's amazing about it is how open it is, you know.
Yeah.
So all the other places we've mentioned so far are quite, you know, bushy and or hilly or, you know, not as open. So here you literally go to a vantage point, you scan, you see for miles and you can literally see, okay, there's lions walking there, there's a herd of elephants walking there, there's some buffalo. And I think that's the beauty of it, is you literally can see it from a distance. It's a typical out of Africa feel and experience, you know. And I think that's what's amazing about it. And again, I mean, you can't really talk about these national parks and not bringing the migration. That's what they're famous for. And during that migration season, again, the Masai Mara National Park can get quite busy and crowded. And that's why I would always suggest going to maybe the Triangle, which is less crowded, but you get the same amazingness, if that's a word. So I think that's, how about you? What do you think about the Masai
Mara? Yeah, I think the Masai Mara is great. I think, you know, unfortunately, both of these parks had their negative feedback on social media, but I was actually speaking to someone this weekend. If you really wanted to, you could put a negative video out on every single reserve, including private concessions. You know, so it's kind of all about, you know, social media and kind of what to believe. Yes, these parks can get busy, but you can also work your way around it. So whether you're doing a safari like by yourself or with a local guide, you could avoid a lot of those busy sightings. For example, you know, if there's a lion and there's 20 cars there, you know, if you just carry on driving, there's a very good chance that you're going to find your own lions because there's so many of them around. And so I think it's about, you know, what you want out of the experience. But I mean, from a pure wildlife point of view, it's hard to compete from a sheer numbers point of view with the Masai Mara. And we'll get to the Serengeti now. But I totally agree with you. Like the Mara Triangle and then also the private conservancies, I think is another great way. Yes, it's going to cost more, but if you want to focus purely on photography and to have as sort of personalized experience as possible, I think those two are great options.
Yeah. And about you, Anso, like I said, it's a bit more, but I think the quality of experience if you go to the Triangle or these conservancies are much better.
Yeah.
And you just touched on the Serengeti, Yuan, and I know that you're also very soon going to the Serengeti.
Yeah.
What do you like about the Serengeti?
Yeah, the Serengeti is is a place that I love dearly. I prefer the southern and eastern part compared to the north. But again, you know, if you look at areas like Ndutu, which is part of that sort of Ngorongoro conservation area, there's great campsites and things in the national park. And I think also one of the places where I've often said I'd love to just spend a month there in my own vehicle and photograph, because especially like around the marshes. So like now, February, March, that's when the migration flips around. So they don't cross the river, but they're on these open plains, and that's where they give birth. So you get hundreds of thousands of baby wildebeests cruising around, and that obviously attracts the predators. So lots of hyenas, good lions, probably the best cheetah viewing that you're going to get in Africa. And then, you know, further to the east, you've got these big koppies, you know, like the typical Lion King scene, where you've got open plains, massive granite outcrops, and you often get cats lying on these rocks, especially lions. If you're lucky, leopard and cheetah, and it's often to get away from the tsetse flies. You know, yes, it's a vantage point, but also for them to get away from the tsetse flies. So photographically, it's phenomenal. And because of the big spaces, you know, and like the Masai Mara, probably in a similar way. And I think Kruger also in a way, and I actually saw a video on Kruger like this past weekend. But even if you have a lot of cars, there's so much space that it can be done ethically. You know, it's, I often say, you know, if the vehicles park correctly, sort of around a granite outcrop and no one's sort of interfering with the animal's behavior or in each other's shot, people can sit there. You know, you can have 30 vehicles there and it really doesn't make a difference. Yes, if you kind of look around you and you try and find the negative, you will find it. But because of the big open space, especially in the Masai Mara and the National and Serengeti, if you get a lot of vehicles, you can make it work, and you can still get great images, not interfere with the animals. But I think, yeah, those two, the Masai Mara and Serengeti, from the sheer wildlife, I mean, I was blown away the first time I went to both of those destinations. Coming from a place like the Kruger,
yeah,
you almost say, like, take all the animals you've ever seen there, and like you'll probably find it in a day or two in these parks.
I also just think it's worth mentioning about, as I can't speak for the National Reserve in the Masai Mara or the Serengeti. Maybe you'll speak more about that, Johan. But in the Mara Triangle, there's a lot of these park rangers. As soon as there's a high-profile sighting, they'll actually go to these sightings and they'll actually monitor it in a way. And if they feel like, listen, these animals are getting affected by too many vehicles, they'll ask some vehicles that's been there for a longer time to now leave.
Yeah.
And they'll actually allocate parking spaces for these people to do it as ethically as possible. So the thing is, those kind of things don't make it to social media. It's only the negative things.
Yeah.
So it's only the bad things. But I've been, last year I had a pretty incredible lion sighting, and it attracted quite a few cars in the triangle. But because of the interference of the park ranger, that sighting was done so ethically. The lions continued on their natural way, the direction that they were walking in. We didn't affect them whatsoever. And I think we were like 12, 13 cars there. So I think, and again, nobody posted a video about that on social media. So you only see the negative things. There's a lot of positives there as well.
Yeah. But I think, you know, like in Ndutu as well, like I've had a lot of times where it's just been like a crazy amount of vehicles. It's very popular for lions climbing trees.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, you can spot that from a mile away. So you can often in those sightings get a lot of vehicles. But then again, it's about playing those crowds, you know. Why sit with that particular lion that's got 30 vehicles? If you just sort of drive around, you're going to find something else. You know, whether it be cheetahs on the plains or something in the marshland, lions. So if you follow the crowds, yes, you are going to be frustrated with a lot of vehicles, but you can sort of go your own way and have a lot of sightings all to yourself, which I think our guides in the Mara have done really well. And also, you know, the guides we work with in all of these parks, actually, you know, kind of, we still want to give the guests a great experience. And again, any of the parks, you can go into a private concession in Kruger and have 10 vehicles on standby for a leopard. You know, then you have like a, yes, you only have 3 vehicles in the sighting, but then you can only be there for 10 minutes and you have to make space. You know, so I would rather be able to spend 2 hours there and maybe have 15 cars parked ethically than, you know, have 2 vehicles and then you only get a 10-minute sighting. There's a lot of other parks. I think, you know, maybe one worth mentioning is Burundi, yeah, in Uganda. I think it's just gorillas in general. And if you take Rwanda as well, if you take Volcanoes National Park, for me, I think that's one of the most incredible experiences that you can have in Africa. And I think part of that is because you're on foot, you know, so you, there's nothing separating you from these massive gorillas. And also, you know, I think because they're so closely related to us, you know, I think it's quite an emotional experience. Yeah. But there's also a bit of work that goes into it before you see them. You know, there's a bit of trekking, especially in Burundi, you can get very steep hikes. So you need like element of fitness. But I think also, you know, with this is like with the gorillas, it's only 8 people in a group that can view a particular gorilla family per day. So you spend an hour with them. They make sure it's a good hour. So it's not a case of like stopwatch. Mm. Once you see them until, you know, that hour is over, they make sure that you've got a good hour of viewing. But for me, that is one of the most incredible experiences, being on foot with gorillas. And like I mentioned, you know, they say that I think you're supposed to be no closer than, I think, 8 or 10 meters from these gorillas, but yeah, gorillas don't know that. So often I've had gorillas pulling people's shoelaces, grabbing people by the legs sometimes. It really is a special experience. And I think also being in that forest, man, in South Africa, we don't really know rainforests. Mm. But if you go to like Volcanoes or Burundi National Park, seeing that massive rainforest is truly spectacular.
No, I can imagine. I'm quite keen to head up there.
Yeah.
Are there any national parks that's sort of still worth mentioning that we haven't spoken about, or one that you maybe want to visit that you haven't visited before that you can think of?
I'm trying to think now. I think Ruaha in Tanzania is also one that we used to travel to quite a bit. I haven't been there myself, but I'm trying to think what other national parks. Obviously, in South Africa, you know, we've got quite a few. Addo.
Yeah.
There's mountain zebras. Quite a few national parks there. But I think, you know, anyone that sort of comes to South Africa, I think the Kruger will probably be that particular place.
Yeah. I'm heading to Kafue National Park later this year, which, yeah, I'm quite excited about. And it's a super, super large national park.
Yeah.
I think it's in the top 3 of largest national parks in Africa, I think. It's,
yeah,
it's really big. So heading there, don't know what to expect. I just know that it's going to be very vast and big and lots of tsetse flies, but yeah, I'm excited for it. So we'll get feedback on that as well. I know Andrew just returned from Odzala, which, yes, also in the Congo,
yeah,
which also looks really incredible.
That looks amazing.
Yeah.
And then also, I forgot Amboseli. Amboseli, obviously. So that's probably, I think, if you love elephants, you know, there's no better place to view elephants than Amboseli, especially with Kilimanjaro as a backdrop. So yeah, there's some great national parks out there. And, you know, I think these national parks, with all the negative, you know, publicity that some of them might have had, I think there's definitely still big room for them, and you can still have an amazing experience at each of these national parks.
And I think what people also need to realize is most countries in Africa, there are circuits available. So it's not like in Kenya. We just spoke about Kenya now, and I also didn't even think about Amboseli, but you can combine Amboseli so easily with the Masai Mara and then Samburu, which is, yeah, in the north, or Laikipia, which is in the north of Kenya, which are also incredible reserves.
Yeah.
So, and that's the same for Tanzania. You can do Tarangire in Ngorongoro Crater and the Serengeti. So yeah, all of these countries have got these circuits. So, and those might be reserves that you haven't heard of before, but that doesn't make them less incredible. They, yeah, are incredible, yeah.
So yeah, that's just to mention a few. Like I said, there's a lot of other national parks that we haven't even touched on. Let us know which one is your favorite national park. Which one are you going to, out of these, are you going to next?
My next one is the Masai Mara end of March. And you going?
I'm going Masai Mara and Serengeti now February, March. So I'll be away for a month. So yeah, excited to get at both.
Going to be up in East Africa. Nice. Yeah. Good.
Yeah, guys, that's it from us for this particular episode. Thank you so much for listening. Don, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Johan.
And we'll catch you guys on the next episode. Cheers for now.
Cheers. Bye.